I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. Howell and Jamie here this week, brought to you by Eye of the Man Flu, and I'm standing in a garage full of rabbits. Oh. That's the truth. Oh. I'm doing the Box Set Pod today from the bunny shed. Next to me is a rabbit called Merlin, standing on its back legs, looking at me, thinking it's going to get fed. Luna is his friend. He's knobbing around. Merlin's got kind of a big mane. Luna is a more of a normal looking rabbit. I've got two guinea pigs to the left of me. Mm-hmm. One with a beautiful Nicky Clark hairdo, black hair. It really is quite an impressive boof. I've got a giant rabbit behind me in the big cage. Massive it is. Size of a 2-year-old child.
Jesus Christ.
Probably
is that,
bigger.
Is that unhealthy, though? Is that an unhealthy rabbit?
No, that's a giant rabbit. It's a French lop.
Okay.
So, whoppers.
Yeah.
Whoppers. I had another one today called Grumpy Barbara. Grumpy Barbara decided she didn't want to eat anymore because she's grumpy.
Is her actual name Grumpy Barbara?
Well, her name's Barbara, but that is grumpy, a nickname by both the owners and us. And I've had to take her to the vets. I had another one the other day that needed force feeding. Jeez. We've had a bad few days of rabbit related time consuming stuff, and I'm standing in the garage now in the bunny shed because I'm waiting for another rabbit to be delivered, and the person delivering it is 36 minutes late.
What an idiot.
Nothing is more annoying.
Shut that hotel down.
Well, that's what it feels like. I'm telling you, some days it's great. And some days you go, you know what? The rabbits aren't the problem.
The people.
It's just owners. The people. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Absolute
joke.
Human beings, I'm telling you. Overrated. We've still never spoken on the Box Set Pod about your current situation, you know?
About,
the
child.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
We wanted to keep it pretty, you know, quiet while working out any, you know.
Well, that's why I was letting you suggest it.
Yeah. I'm having a child.
Well done, Jamie.
It's going to be a boy. We know that for sure. And so far, so good. We're about 19 weeks from potential evac from the said zone.
Right. Yeah. The guy delivering his rabbit is here. I'm going to have to leave you for 3 minutes.
All right.
We'll cut this bit
out.
Yeah,
you cut it out. I've got anything to say.
Hello?
Have we rung your mobile? Matthew?
Who's that?
It's Howell and Jamie.
Oh, hey, man. How you doing?
What are you doing?
I'm skiving. I have to. But I'm
forgetting.
Basically, I'm waiting for my wife to arrive with our sleeping daughter.
Oh, that sounds like a beginning of a fairy tale.
Yeah.
Okay. So this entire podcast that's planned around you can't happen then? Is that what you're saying? Because of your selfish daughter and your selfish wife.
Nothing's been planned. Nothing was agreed.
You're the only person who suggested anything, therefore you're the king of plans.
I didn't suggest anything. I said, is anything happening?
Oh, let me check. Let me just have a look at that message. Are we doing transparent?
That's not what I said.
No, you didn't say that. Any podding happening tomorrow? I think I should be available. That's a yes to me. Yeah, you're right. You didn't answer following that. I mean, let's face it, this podcast has died. Ever since we tried to involve other people, that was the big mistake, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Not even Jack's joining us.
Even Jack.
Do you want 30 seconds on what we did wrong about transparent? Because it might be your only chance.
Yeah, go on then.
Go on then.
Well,
26 seconds left.
The main problem I had with what you said was that you just didn't like any of the characters. And I just think that's a really bullshit reason for liking a show, because does one like Don Draper? Do you like Tony Soprano? Because
yes.
They're not nice people, but I really like the Pfeffermans. I particularly like... I can't remember all their first names. I really like Josh, and
oh, yeah. You like them so much that you can't remember their names.
Yeah, that's right. Just like you. Yeah. I don't know. I just think it's a complex show, and it's just because they're not doing anything heroic, does that mean they're not valuable or interesting? And I certainly think that they're... Well, I'm not phrasing this well. I wouldn't listen to me right now.
How are they valuable or interesting in any way? Tony Soprano and Don Draper are two characters who you really like. You do like them, but you want to know why you like them, because you shouldn't. Everything about them tells you shouldn't. I don't like these characters, and everything about them tells me that I shouldn't like these characters. Even their dad says they're selfish bunch of bastards.
I'm all right. Look, all I'm saying is that I don't think you need to like characters to like a show. And in spite of that, I do like them anyway.
You're right. I suppose Little Red Riding Hood was a bit of a dick, wasn't she? I mean, she was.
In the 30 seconds that I've been allotted, we've still got time for another glib Howell Evans metaphor.
I meant that. I meant it. Little Red Riding Hood was a dick, wasn't she?
Yeah.
She was a dick. She took a shortcut. She did lots of things she shouldn't. And then her grandma got eaten as a result.
Little Red Riding Hood than I have.
Well, something like that. But the point of the fairy tales is that little children do things that are stupid or wrong, and that gets them in trouble or gets them dead. And that was the point. They were horror stories. They were scary stories, weren't they? And you could argue, I'm trying to see your side of the point here, you could argue that a story doesn't have to have a character that you want to agree with or like. It could be a warning to us all. We're watching these dicks in Los Angeles, self-obsessed dicks, who we shouldn't try...
Are they just self-obsessed dicks?
As far as episode one and two, episode one and two, even their dad refers to them as self-obsessed. As selfish. How did I raise three such selfish people?
Find in any family, there's always schisms within a family, and there's always qualities that people aren't going to like about each other. And I think that's one of the things that makes the show so strong, is that it is a real working family.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean,
to underestimate how difficult that is to achieve.
Maybe.
And yes, they're sort of California rich people, but you know, no one. In television is portrayed realistically. Everyone seems to have these limitless pockets of money to get into their interesting scrapes.
But it's nothing to do with wealth. It's to do with them just being just completely self-serving, just like self-serving. And the point is that... Well, that's the point. That's the point of the box set pod, isn't it, Matt? You're supposed to be giving me reasons why I should keep going with it. What you're doing is just telling me that you love them.
This is the show, and I think Jamie touched on it, about people exploring their, certainly their sexuality, and also their general personality as well. I think the characters in this show aren't happy with themselves. I don't think there's a lot of self-loathing going on, and they're trying to figure out a way to sort of make sense of things. It's a very, very modern show in that sense.
So you're saying I've got something in common with these characters because they don't like them either?
Well, you are a sort of misanthropic figure of hate. So, yeah.
You've made me sneeze. Seriously, that might be a point that they find themselves repulsive in the same ways that I find them repulsive. And as we touched on last week...
They're not like your classic kind of searching for validation type characters. I find them very, very real and very nuanced. And they're...
Oh, you're right. I agree completely. They are very real and very nuanced. And I know people, I've known lots of people who are very real and nuanced in that way. And I would not want to be stuck in a lift with them at this point, two episodes in.
People, their stories are very interesting. I really think you haven't gotten to the best parts of the show. And Jamie, I'm sad to hear that you didn't like it after. Did you watch both series?
No, I did like the first series. And
Matt's more disappointed in you, Jamie, than me, because you were supposed to defend it.
I did try and defend it.
But you haven't seen any of it at all.
I've seen two episodes of it. I think the point is that Jamie should have persuaded me to go further in the absence of anyone else who gave a shit.
Yeah, but I like it.
But that's what I'm disappointed about, is Jamie didn't particularly like it.
It's not that I didn't like it, because I watched the whole first series and I thought there were some really good moments in it and I did enjoy it at times, but I'm not passionate enough about it to mount a defence against someone who doesn't like it. Like, I can I can watch it and I think you're saying
you needed backup.
I needed backup because I couldn't feel the urge to really sell it to Howell as much as a show that I really love. So, like, I've got into season two, but at the same time, I've stopped watching season two. I'm going to probably give it another shot because I do want to get into it again, but I went off it a little bit, so it was kind of hard for me to sell it to Howell when I'm still kind of reselling it to myself.
2 points. Number one, when Matt listens back to his podcast, he'll be amazed at how much it sounds like he's actually on the space station with the signal that we've got. And number two, I've almost spent £5 in Skype credit talking to Matthew now instead of just Skyping him. Point number three, Matthew, I want you therefore to tell me, why should I carry on watching this? I know what you're saying about it being nuanced and all that. What's the nugget that's waiting for me that makes my heart get excited?
I think there are genuine, really touching moments in this. There are sort of weddings and moments with kids and with people just sort of finding times of tenderness. And certainly, like that moment I mentioned in my little prepared statement about the families, you know, because there is a lot of that kind of modern Californian selfishness in this show that obviously you guys have really taken against. But when they kind of let their guard down and they just be around each other in that way, that, you know, you're at your worst and your best with your family because you know them so well.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
you wouldn't ever be with people you don't know.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
That's a really good defence.
And we did touch on it last week that perhaps the reason it's so uncomfortable at the beginning is because we're recognising the most annoying flaws of ourselves in these characters. You know, they seem to be representing the materialistic world, selfish world that our generation have grown up in compared to our parents, you know. And I think that is kind of the point.
And
I do find that quite uncomfortable.
I find it very funny, Jamie, because certainly some of the stuff that, and I hope I'm not getting the character's name wrong, but the elder of the three siblings, the Lady Sarah, some of the stuff that she gets up to, because I don't know if it happens in episode two, but it's not a spoiler to say that her and her husband split up. And she ends up kind of having this sort of sexual renaissance, and some of that is really funny, but in a way that is much more mature than anything else I've seen do that. You know, she's trying some fairly extreme stuff, but it doesn't just poke fun at it or go, "Oh, look, having a bit of sex." It's very mature and well reasoned, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
No, I think that's a very good argument you've put forward, and you've actually convinced me to go back and give season two a further push.
Yeah, most of what you said was a total waste of time, but the bit when you said there's some touching bits coming up, I'll stick with it then. That's all you needed to say.
Good to know that I come up with some stuff. At least there are some little moments of sunshine in my otherwise cloudy diatribe. But also, the cast are just so strong. I haven't seen a cast this strong for a long time.
What, West Wing?
Honestly, it's in that sort of area, I think, yeah.
Get in the fucking sea, Matthew. Get in the fucking sea. Thank you, Matthew. My Skype credit is now down to just 84 pence, so I think we're going to have to say goodbye now. Got any words on the latest episode? Hey, are you up to date with Game of Thrones?
No, I haven't watched it since Series 4.
Holy crap. Matt, all those questions, all that debate we had about is it another loss? Do they actually know where it's going? What's the point? Is this just gratuitous nonsense?
Oh.
Matthew, it's happening. Every freaking reason to watch it is coming home to roost.
Yeah, I'm hearing rumblings.
It's amazing.
Me want to come back into it.
Really, just crack on. You'll catch up within like a week. And it's, oh my God, that episode last night, which is what Jamie and I are going to talk about now,
yes.
Which is why Matthew and anyone who doesn't want it spoiled need to switch off, because that's what we're going to talk about, the very latest episode of Game of Thrones, which is season six, episode nine.
It's called Battle of the
Bastards. It's called War of the Bastards. Battle of the Bastards. Oh my God, it was so good.
Can I just have a quick mention of something, actually? Since I'm
Skype credit down to 77p. Yep, carry on.
Have either of you watched any of Preacher on Amazon Prime yet?
No, but I definitely want to, yeah. I've heard good things.
Are you familiar with the graphic novel?
No.
I have heard of it, but I've not read any.
It's really worth checking out. It's Dominic Cooper, Ruth Negga, and... Actually, I don't know any of the other names of the people in it, but it's...
You're not very good with names, are you?
I'm not deciding it yet, but it's certainly... It's fun and it's very different.
Great. Great. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much, Matthew.
And
maybe we'll speak to you on the podcast sometime.
Yes.
You and Tiernan and Ben and Jack and Marcia and Mel and Christian. Literally everybody.
Everybody's
fucked off. Watch what happens, right? As soon as it starts getting dark again at 6 p.m., they'll all be back. Hey, I'm free tonight, guys. Just got a message from Adam, even the internet department.
Oh, what?
I have no input for Transparent, though, and other stuff to do.
Oh.
Other stuff.
The only person who's been guinea pigs on Transparent is you. Because it's so brilliant.
I'm sure it is. I just, you know, like everything, it takes a little hurdle. But you loved it from episode one, did you?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow. No, I did enjoy it. I really did. I'll tell you what, there was an extra hurdle, though. This cost me £79 to watch those first two episodes because I had to subscribe to Amazon Prime.
Oh.
And then
you're in full deep now, aren't you? Yeah.
So it was hanging over my head and I cancelled my subscription.
So I got my money back.
I got my money back. But it was unfair pressure to put on the beginning of this box set compared to any other. £79 hanging over your head.
Yeah, that is
I tell you what, you should order some stuff that you need quickly as well. Because that's worth it as well. Getting stuff next day is pretty sweet.
I can imagine. But you know.
Rabbit food.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear a rabbit drinking some water? There's a rabbit right next to me now. Let me dangle the microphone down.
Hear it?
Did you hear that? I've got rabbits all around me, Matt. All around me. I'm in the bunny shed. Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna leave the bunny shed now. I'm gonna go back in the house. Let's get rid of Matthew Wandless. What a beautiful summer's evening it is. This evening. Let's get rid of Matthew Wandless and talk about.
I'm on a deck drinking an Aperol spritz.
Oh, you are, aren't you? You shit.
No, I'm not. All right. Good evening, gentlemen.
So, welcome to part two or three or whatever we're up to. Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Holy smokes.
I mean...
What an episode. I mean, on social media is pretty much agreeing that it might be the best episode ever of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And I can completely concur with that general consensus.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's got to be.
I mean, let's start from the top. Like, it had everything that you'd want in a Game of Thrones episode. It had Daenerys riding her dragon and killing slave owners. Teamed up with Tyrion. At last, the duo were together. He's got the brains. She's got brains as well. But also, he's got a bit more wily streetwiseness about him, giving her a bit more info. It was wonderful seeing them take down those slave owners. Oh, yep. That was fantastic.
And how I don't think there were that many comments about them about being a woman in this one.
Yeah,
you know, like it started to bore me not for sexist reasons, but for just reasons of like, do we really have to just call everyone a C word if they're a girl?
Yeah.
And you know, it was just seemed a bit easy. And finally, she was like, it felt complex. I was going to say, did you need that? Wouldn't it have been even braver to have the whole episode?
They could have just totally done Battle of the Bastards. That whole, it was enough in itself. That's why. But it was a longer episode, wasn't it? It was. It certainly. I think it was at least. I think it was about. I mean, maybe 20 minutes longer than usual.
It felt like it.
Yeah. It felt like
I was
a film.
How long's this? It was 55 minutes.
A lot of people are saying as well that, you know, it's better than some of the films you like in the last few years. Better than a lot of films you've seen over the last few years. The quality of the storytelling, quality of the filmmaking, and the performances. It was an epic. It was amazing. I mean, if you just go from the battle scene itself. Just the horror, like the stages that it goes through, and I know that the two creators, Benioff and whatever his name is, I can't remember now. They were influenced by a lot of major battles in the past, like a Battle of Agincourt, which was a battle where mountains of bodies were used as barriers to sort of pen people in. And that was a horrific scene, and seeing it from Jon Snow's perspective, there's a great video actually, I think,
of the making of that,
and how much those 40 horses that ride towards Jon Snow.
I was literally just pasting the link to that into an email to send to you. Yeah, so I'll cancel that.
Yeah.
Can we put that on?
Definitely.
Why don't we put? Okay, listen, because this is a spoiler area and we don't want anyone else to see it, why don't we create a special web page called theboxsetpod.com/bastards, right? And we'll put that link there. How about that?
That sounds good. That sounds very good.
So don't watch that video if you want to spoil anything.
Because you'd be surprised how much of that battle scene is not CGI. That's really 40 horses running straight at Jon Snow's character, and a lot of the scenes with him in battle from his perspective were actually real. There's a bit of CGI in there as well, because otherwise it was insane. But it's just an incredible scene. And then you have that moment where he's like being suffocated, and it was like it was really traumatic to watch.
Yeah, it was. And I thought they set it up at the beginning like he was definitely going to die again.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, all the conversations, that was quite clever.
Yeah.
I should have sensed the bait and switch there.
Yeah. And it was very clever. It was genuinely like I thought, oh, he is actually going to die. I thought, there's no way he'll die again. And I thought, they're going to play us a little bit, make us think he'll die. But actually, they got me to the point where I thought, no, he is actually going to die. And
then when the music started, when he's being trampled on.
Oh, God, that was
he's drowning.
Horrendous.
I was breathing for him. He just couldn't. It went on and on and on. And I was like, well, this piece of music has had its beginning, its middle, and it's pretty much its end, which means that this is it. It's
incredible.
It's goodbye.
And the whole, like, Ramsay killing the one of the few remaining Stark boys. I've forgotten what his name is now. Was it
Grunt?
Grunt. The one he never even got. You know, it's the same child actor from the very first series, but he's barely said two words in the entire show.
Oh, bless him.
He's literally just a plot piece. But what a plot piece. Like, even though you don't really know about him, so you kind of think he's going to die and you don't care as much, you actually do care about him in the end, when because he dies in such a horrific last minute arrow to the to the back moment. It's unbelievable. The timing and the delivery of some of the dramatic scenes in that episode were really brilliantly done.
Also, can I just ask, one thing I didn't understand was, who did Cersei bring back? Not Cersei, what's her face? The sister.
The sister.
What was his sister called? Jon Snow's sister.
Sansa.
Sansa. I always get confused with the S's.
She brought back, what, who did she...
Who was it that saved him?
It was
who
Littlefinger
was the army?
And the army of, is it the Vale? Might be.
Are those the ones that...
you know, with the brat boy who's king or who's a lord of that, that land.
Who's been
controlled basically by Littlefinger, because she sent an owl off to him, didn't she, asking for help. He turns up last minute, saves the day.
That's right.
Also, there's a lot of rumours going around about Sansa, and probably rubbish, but you know there's that moment where she... brutal moment where she gets the opportunity to feed Ramsay to his own dogs.
Yeah.
And Ramsay in that scene says, there'll always be a part of me and you. And there's rumours that people are saying, is she pregnant with his child from that horrible scene?
Oh, no.
But that's still a rumour, and a lot of people are also like dismissing that as nothing. But it's just that he's got into her soul with his cruelness, because she kind of enjoys his death and has that little smirk. And there's talk of like that in the making of the video, there's talk of like that scene where Jon Snow pummels Ramsay's face. Was they shot that scene like about 80 times from different angles, because they wanted to get the right amount of pummeling or the right angles and get the right. And then the Sansa smile scene where she walks away and he's being eaten, they filmed that like 12 or 13 times just to get that right smirk at the right moment. So they were very exacting, you know. It took 28 days to film one episode.
Well, I'll stay where I stand on this. I wasn't a fan of the smirk.
Oh, really?
I thought... I'm not going to be happy if they take her in that direction. It's going to be one of the parts of Game of Thrones that is the soap opera end, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of when it behaves like a soap opera, I'm not actually very happy. There's a part of me that is happy because it's like a soap opera, so I go, ooh! But I much more prefer it when my good characters stay good.
Well, yeah, you say that, but you know, if you actually look back,
I don't mind when bad characters turn good, like Jaime Lannister.
Yeah,
but the good ones, they should stay good, shouldn't they? When you look back
at you look back at Sansa as a character, like in the first few series, she's a bit of a brat. Like she's actually
she's not
actually that nice. Then some horrible things happen to her, obviously, and you feel very sorry for her. But was she ever a particularly nice character? Like, I'd argue that she's gone...
Well, she was just a teenage girl, wasn't she? She was rebelling.
Yeah.
That was the point.
I mean...
she.
Yeah, possibly. I think that she's always been a little... There's always been a little element of a cruelness in Sansa, and that's been sort of developed by being around and treated horribly by cruel people like Joffrey and Ramsay. And I don't think she'll be an out-and-out bad character like Cersei Lannister or anything like that. But I think she's more ruthless than Jon Snow is. And that's probably the difference.
Maybe, but then I saw that scene. The reason I want that scene to stay without any... particular extra meaning is that I saw that scene about, you know, what we're seeing is the women winning.
Right? Yes, yeah.
Women who've been seriously shat upon. And that scene was about rape, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was about the rapist saying to the victim, there'll always be a part of me in you, and you'll never get away from me even if you kill me.
Yeah.
And she went... no, you will disappear. Your words will disappear.
Yeah,
you will disappear, and everything will go away. And I thought that was really nice, and it's quite a hopeful thing. I would hate, therefore, having read it like that. Mm. I'd hate, therefore, for the triumph of good over evil to then have to turn evil for the sake of entertainment. That would annoy me. But maybe you're right. Maybe she, you know, the teenage brat was just not a very nice person.
Yeah.
I was a brat when I was a teenager. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm a lovely person.
Yeah, you know, so. But I mean, I think that I don't think that necessarily it means she'll turn evil either. I think it's more a case of she got to see him crack. Like, that was the thing with Ramsay. Even when he was getting pummeled by Jon Snow in the face, and even when he was tied to that chair, he was still being the smirky mind games Ramsay Snow. But then when the dogs come out, that's when he kind of falls to pieces, and obviously he's getting eaten at that point, which isn't nice. And she gets to hear him, you know, in a situation that he's and see a side of him, pure fear and terror that she's never heard before. And it's probably the joy of seeing him in that situation and having never seen him behave anything other than just, you know, cruel and loving it. So maybe it's a little bit of that, but I mean,
I think as well, yeah, no, but I think you're probably right. I think it probably is, they are taking her in that direction, because Jon Snow beating the crap out of his face, I mean, I was watching that and I don't know if you like me were doing it, but I was going, yes, hit him again. I was like, is he still alive? What have you left him alive for? Kill him. And then she. So you could argue that that was the vengeance, and that was the bit that the audience agree with, because we go, we're so angry. But Sansa's is so much more considered.
That's it.
I'm so ill. So hers is so much more considered that.
That's it.
You get what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it's a lot more of a well thought out serial killer death. A lot more what Ramsay would have done to someone, you know, like, it is what he did.
But he did deserve it. You know, he needed that. Jon Snow was doing something on behalf of somebody else. You know, he'd been horrible to various members of his family, but she had been abused by this person.
Yeah.
And she took cold, calculated revenge on him, which was entirely fair, if you ask me. And
I kept thinking when he was, when they broke into the Winterfell and Ramsay's shooting the arrows at Jon Snow and keeps hitting his shield, I was just thinking, why don't you just aim at his legs or his groin area, or just aim low so you can at least hinder his like running towards you? Yeah, that's just what I would have done if I was Ramsay. I would have aimed lower and probably taken him out that way, but you know, other than that, I'm glad he actually got pummeled.
I wonder, if you were Grunt, or whatever his name is, right? Wouldn't you have wiggled more in your run?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's zigzagged. Another thing. Why was he not zigzagging? Why was he not zigzagging? Why would you run in a straight line?
Perhaps because he knew it would look fucking hilarious. I'd rather die with dignity running a straight line.
Forget that. I'd be diagonal all over the place. Cause, you know,
exactly. Especially when you hear the... When you hear the, like, twang of the crossbow. Yeah. That's when you start zigzagging.
Damn straight.
Just, as soon as you hear that twang, change direction.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No chance. No chance.
What was he thinking? I have no idea. It was ridiculous running style.
Should the title of this podcast be "Did Grunt Deserve to Die"?
It should be if that was Grunt's name. But
what was his name? Then?
Oh, Rickon. That was it. Rickon Stark.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did Rickon Grunt deserve to die? Yes, based on his lack of strategic running skills.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a foolish
move. How different would that entire battle have been? How many fewer people would have died if he'd have just zigzagged after the twang? Yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you realise, like, you know, if you're giving him a straight line trajectory to shoot his arrow down, he can predict where you're going to be 5 feet from where his arrow is going to land. I don't understand why it wouldn't enter your head. You know,
even better, just stop running when you hear the twang.
Yeah.
Forget this. If you're bothered about how the zigzag looks, twang, stop running, wait. The arrow will land some distance in front of you.
Yeah.
Because Ramsay's factored that into his shot.
Absolutely.
Start running again. Just run past the arrow.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, simple as. Simple.
Idiot.
I know. He balls that up. And that is his own fault, ultimately.
And thus, he deserved to die.
Yeah, he kind of did, unfortunately.
What about Jon Snow's decision to run towards him? Do you think that was clever?
Well, no, because that's exactly what, it's like Sansa said, it's exactly what he wanted. It's what Ramsay wanted you to do, and he did exactly that. But, you know, did he have any other choice at that point? Because he was in no man's land. He was either retreat back to your men, and but at the same time, the arrows were coming down, so it was a hard situation. So he was in no man's land. Ramsay had got him the moment he ran out in his horse to save his brother. Ramsay had him in his lair, in his trap that he'd set for him. And it was a really amazing plan that Ramsay had come up with. And I actually was thinking at one point, you know what? I was a brutal, horrible person, but strategically, that was an amazing plan.
That's what I thought.
And if Sansa hadn't come through with it.
Surely, if we look back through the history of modern warfare, the winners are the ones with the cruelest, brutalest strategy.
Absolutely.
Probably.
Yeah.
Aren't they? They're not the best. They're not the kindest people.
No.
Mind you, that said, in the case of Hitler, he was a dick. Mm. And the fact that he was a dick bled into his strategic thinking, which ultimately meant that not enough people,
would challenge him,
got behind him or challenge him. Yeah. Maybe.
Well, here's my thought about it all, though, as well. From RE the battle, like, there's a point where Jon Snow says, so we're not going to get to Sansa, we're not going to have any more men, we've got to go into battle. But Sansa, then those men turn up. Now, Sansa hasn't told Jon. She didn't tell John that she'd sent an owl or a hawk or whatever it was to Littlefinger to bring the men from the Vale to help them out.
You're absolutely right.
Now,
you're absolutely
why
right.
didn't she tell
Were
him
you
that?
Thinking of mentioning this at some point?
Yeah, exactly. That might have helped me delay the battle a little bit longer so that we could...
You know that massive stack of men there, over there? Yeah. The massive stack of men that forms half of that circle that you saw? Right, probably at least 1,000 men, all intertwined and dying. That's because you couldn't be asked telling me that you'd sent a raven.
Exactly, it's absolutely
to your fucking weird friend.
It's ridiculous. Like when she's in that tactics room and she says, "What were you not thinking of asking me?" Because I know Ramsay. She could have mentioned it at that exact moment instead of just saying, "Don't do what he expects you to do," which is it's not bad advice. But it's not as good as saying, don't go into battle just yet, because I've got a whole battalion cavalry of men from Littlefinger coming in about 5 hours later. Can we do that? Yes, we can. That's fine. That's our new plan. I mean, it's simple.
I thought that scene where they were talking about don't do what he expects you to do was brilliant. That's some of the best dialogue I've seen in something.
It's very good. I mean,
in ages.
They didn't get... There wasn't a bum note in that whole entire episode. It was traumatic, but it was.
But they somehow get the don't do what he expects you to do. Jon Snow says, "I don't fucking know what that is. How do I know what not to do if I don't know what he's expecting me to do?" Well, don't do that. She says, "Just don't do that." Go well. What else then?
That could go on a while.
If I come up with something else, and I don't fucking know. So help me. Tell me what it is that I should be doing.
Yeah.
And it to come up with the dialogue for that speech. To sit there and go, okay, well, what is that? What is it? It's an argument of theory against actual ability, is it? It's like when we used to do radio shows and we'd have people sit down and say to us, well, don't do that you did, listen back to something and pull it apart and say, don't do that.
Yeah.
And my number one comeback was normally, what should we do instead? And it's almost like, well, I don't know the answer to that. That's for you to decide. So, well, don't, what's the, there's no, I really got that sense from Jon Snow. It's like, there's no point in this conversation.
Yeah.
Because I'm not coming up with the answers. Otherwise, I'd have already come up with the answers. So tell me what the answer is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there was no answer.
It was great, but how do you sit and write that? How do you actually, come up with that idea?
It's very well
it's
done.
Really smart.
And do you genuinely think that they have taken the shackles off them this series? They don't feel, they are not
oh my
feeling
God, yeah.
repressed by George R. R. Martin's Bulky Behind and his next book, and they just feel like they can actually just literally just rip the shackles off a little bit. They know where he wants it to go. Fine, George, we know where you want to end up. Let us find our way there, and they're bloody loving it. And I think that in some ways they are telling this story better than I think even George R. Martin could, because they're doing it. I don't know that for sure.
Now then.
But, you know, there we go.
I tend to agree with everything that you've just said. However, is it like somebody has built the best... They've spent fucking years building this house, you know, building the foundation, and the walls are all right and stuff, and it's the most sturdy house in the world. And then you come along and you put like a fez on top of the house, and everyone goes, "Doesn't that look awesome?"
And add a super woofer speaker system in the lounge, and everyone's going, "Why
did you fucking do this all along?"
It is a lot like that, but you know what? Like, there is a difference between. I think they've struggled at times with the adaption of a book, adapting that to the TV, to the entertainment world and screen world. And I think that they've done well. I mean, they've not done badly until now, but that struggle is changing because they're not having to read a book and then go, "I'm adapting what's happening in this book now." They are taking ideas from George R. R. Martin of where things are going, and they're interpreting them in their own way. I think that's freed them up massively. And this series has been, season 4 was brilliant, but this is by far the best. Every episode has nearly been a classic. Even the one before that, where Arya.
You're right. Yeah, that was great. But so to wrap up, right? Well, to sum up what you've just said, to sum that up, I would say without George R. R. Martin, Game of Thrones is way better. However, without George R. R. Martin having had the shackles on in the first place, Game of Thrones could never be this good. If let's think in another world, right? He carries on right through to the end of all the series. That would be an inferior Game of Thrones to the one that we've actually got in reality, because he's parting company towards the end.
Yeah, I agree. But what I think, this is how I see it, right? George R. R. Martin, until now, they have been taking his books and turning them into great television. Now they have the rule book rather than the book, so they know the rules of Game of Thrones.
That's right.
But they can take it in their direction. So that's all they need now. They don't even need to read the books anymore. They know the rules of the game. They know the rules of the story. They know everything about it, the intricacies of it all. They can now run with that, and that's freed them up massively.
That
better do actually, because
that's very good. Yeah. The book or the rule book.
Yes, that's all you need. And all they need is the rule book.
That's very good, Jay.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Did you come up with that
just
yourself?
Just right now.
Also, I've just come up with the title of this podcast.
What's that then?
The Bastard Battle.
The Bastard Battle.
No, he's gone.
What was the
The Bastards, the pair of bastards.
The Bastards.
That's the pair of bastards. That's the title.
Okay.
In fact, why don't we start a new podcast? Look, everyone's dropped out of the Box Set Pod, right? Fuck them. Why don't we just start a brand new podcast? Call it The Pair of Bastards. And just talk about Game of Thrones. Let's put that out there. All right. If you think that we should, email us, studio@theboxsetpod.com. That'd be good. We could spend our hour a week, half an hour on the Box Set Pod, half an hour on the
latest
Pair of Bastards. Yeah, yeah.
Right, give us your feedback. Right, I've got to go now.
See you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Later.
Okay.
Bye.